702.
The Aubrey Masango Show.
Live, online.
Smartphones, DSTV.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
20 minutes after 8 o'clock, Professor Andre Roux, economist at University of Stellenbosch, joins me now. Prof, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Good evening. Welcome to all your listeners.
So 50 basis points is the amount by which the repo rate has gone up. What does that mean? Help me first understand, Prof, and I know that this might be quite elementary, but what are we talking about when we speak of 50 basis points, right? Because it's important for us to get this right.
Okay.
And then secondly, the repo rate versus the interest rate. Explain just those technicalities for us, please, Prof.
Okay, so basis points. Let's say that the interest rate, for argument's sake, was 7%. Obviously, the next number would be 8%, but between 7 and 8, there are 100 basis points.
Ah.
So if it's 7% and they say it's up by 50, it means it goes up to 7.5.
So 50 basis points is half a percent. It's not 50%.
Half a percentage point.
Yeah.
No,
so
no, thankfully not.
I just need to explain to some of my bras back home that 50 yes. basis points yeah. is not 50%. So it is half a percent. It is not a full percentage point.
Correct.
All right.
Just as 25 basis points the previous time was a quarter of a percentage point.
And what has gone up? What is this thing, the repo rate?
Right. Okay. The repo rate, let's go back a little step. Banks, all banks are obliged by law to keep a certain proportion of their liabilities in the form of cash. That's a legal obligation. But from time to time, some of the banks might not be able to meet that requirement. In which case they have to make up the shortfall. And they can do so by borrowing the shortfall from fellow banks. Some other banks might have surpluses. Failing that, they will borrow that shortfall from the Reserve Bank. And the Reserve Bank will then charge them a rate of interest known as the repo rate. Ah. That's essentially what it boils down to. Now, obviously, banks do something else as well. They lend money to their clients. They advance credit to their clients. And if you're a very fortunate client with a good record, a good credit record, you will pay for that, what we call the prime overdraft rate. Now, historically, and for no really important scientific reason, there's a gap between the repo rate and the prime rate of 3.5%. So what happens is, if the Reserve Bank feels they wish to see interest rates rising, as we saw this afternoon, the governor will announce the 50 basis point increase in the repo rate, and then chances are, as we always see, that the banks will respond by raising their prime rate correspondingly, also by 50 basis points.
So in as much as we are having this conversation about the increase in the repo rate by 50 basis points,
yes.
Our conversation is going to be about how that increase affects the prime lending rate, which is 3.5% or 350 basis points above the repo rate, right?
Correct. And just bear in mind, that's the prime rate. That is the rate at which banks' most favored clients, most creditworthy clients can borrow money. For those who are more of a risk, that lending rate could be substantially higher, could be as much as 20%.
Yeah. Depending on the borrower's desperation, they will then take whatever interest rate the bank offers, right? And Prof, has all sorts of implications for all of us. So let me perhaps take a step back to be able to put myself into the right sort of mode. We now know that the repo rate has gone up by 50 basis points. What was it? What is it now?
It is now. Oh yeah, I should have it off by heart. We normally just look at the new level, It's gone up a number of occasions, by the way, over the last year or so.
So it was 7.25%. Now it's 7.25%.
So it's now 7.75. So add 3.5 to that, and that gives you, what, 11.25, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Exactly right. So,
yeah,
so
that's going to be the prime rate.
So yesterday, the repo rate was at 7.25%. Today,
yes,
after the Reserve Bank's monetary policy meeting, it is now 7.75%. And the
yes,
implication is that 3.5% is going to be added to that, as has been the tradition with
yes,
commercial banks for their most favored clients. And that brings the prime lending rate to 11.25% for the best
right,
clients that
that's
banks
right,
have.
Yes.
Just if you don't mind, Prof, what is the reason for that 3.5% between
okay,
between the repo rate and the prime lending rate? Why and who makes that decision?
Yeah, there's no really important scientific reason. It's just kind of a practice that came into being, or probably a couple of decades ago, back in the time of Tito Mboweni when he was governor of the Reserve Bank. And one mustn't see that, as people often do, as being a kind of a profit margin for the banks. They will need to borrow money from time to time, as I explained, but they don't necessarily have to borrow it from the Reserve Bank. They will try to borrow it from each other, and very often the rate of which they borrow from each other could be lower than the official repo rate. It's just taken as a kind of a signal. So the Reserve Bank raises the repo rate, they are signaling the hope that the banks would follow suit by raising their prime rate accordingly, as I explained a bit earlier. But maybe we can take another step back, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Which is probably important to understand the whole relationship, and that is to zoom in on the fundamental reason for using interest rates as a tool against inflation.
Right.
So inflation is obviously the increase over time in the cost of living and the price of the basket of goods and services. We all know that in the last couple of years, not only here, but all over the world, inflation rates have been rising, which means that the speed of price increases has been accelerating. Now, the problem, of course, with inflation, one of the big problems is it erodes the purchasing power of any amount of money, including one's salary. And the effect might not be immediate, but as time goes by, year in, year out, if, for instance, you have a 10% inflation rate, that means that the prices double, if you have a 40% inflation rate, prices double every 5 years. If you have a 7% inflation rate, prices double every 10 years. And that accumulates. As time goes by, as I said, your purchasing power falls rather dramatically. So no one likes high inflation. In this country, the Reserve Bank, and they use this as what they call an anchor, as what they call inflation targets. That means we'd like to see inflation somewhere between 3 and 6%. Anything above that needs to be addressed. I need to add something else, and that is the Constitution states very clearly what the Reserve Bank's primary function is. And that is to protect the value of the currency. It does not say, Reserve Bank, you are accountable for creating economic growth or for creating jobs, etc. Your first and foremost task is to protect the value of the currency. Add to that the inflation target, and their interpretation is that they must do their very best to make sure that inflation remains somewhere below 6%, preferably 4.5%. At least lower than 6%.
Where is inflation right now?
Sorry, it is now at 7%.
Sure.
Now at 7%. And it has been rising over the last year or so. And for what it's worth, things happen all over the world. But anyway, so constitutionally, the mandate says or implies anything above 6%, you are obliged to take action, Reserve Bank. But I still need to go back another step. What causes inflation? Lots of things cause inflation. It could range from, as we are seeing right now, a fairly high international price of oil, the dollar price of oil. We all know about the very rapid increase in food prices. partly brought about by global shortages, which in turn have been triggered to some extent by the conflict in Ukraine, which has put a restriction on grain exports, for instance. We obviously know all about the swear word load shedding, but also the corresponding rapid increase in energy prices here at home. We know about the fuel price increase. So a whole range of factors are contributing towards this rapid increase in prices. But the Reserve Bank has a bit of a dilemma, because their approach is, always has been, always will be, anywhere in the world, to argue that one of the reasons for inflation is a rapid increase in the growth in the demand for credit, which makes sense. Obviously, as you and I and anybody else borrows more money, we do so to spend that money. And the more we spend, the more we borrow, and the more we spend, the greater the chances of inflation rising. So what follows from all of this is, from the Reserve Bank's perspective, their most important weapon against inflation is the rate of interest. By raising the rate of interest, it makes debt less attractive, less appealing. You and I will slow down our demand for credit. A few months later, we will see, it could be 9 months later, we will see eventually the inflation rate moving downwards. But the dilemma they have right now, I believe, is that most of the major causes of inflation have nothing to do with credit or the money supply. They've been caused by factors outside the ambit of money and monetary affairs. As I just mentioned, international price of oil, rising food prices, rising energy prices, rising labor costs. But it is their constitutional responsibility to do something about it.
Prof, I want to take a couple of steps back. And I worry about what sounds to me like the arbitrary reason for this 3.5% that separates the repo rate and the prime lending rate. When a 50% basis point has such dramatic ramifications and implications for consumers in the country, I would argue that if the 3.5%, which is, as you say, not necessarily a margin for the banks, but I imagine it does at some level function as such. My question is if there aren't any constitutionally binding reasons, legally binding reasons, for this 3.5% traditional buffer, is there space for us to be talking about challenging the very existence of this tradition?
And then saying,
well, banks should be making prime the prime lending rate the repo rate.
No, because then they would. No, then you'd have all kinds of problems. First of all, the extent of that gap really isn't important. It's just a nominal thing. So let's say for the last 20 years, the difference had been 2 percentage points or 2%. We'd still be concerned about the increase in interest rates. So over time, it wouldn't make a difference. Also bear in mind that it's very interesting, actually. So the repo rate has just been raised. There is no obligation on the banks to follow suit. They're not obliged to do so. Traditionally, they do, but there's no rule that says if the Reserve Bank raises the repo rate, then the banks have to raise their prime rate. It's just become kind of an accepted agreement all over the world that when the Reserve Bank does raise or lower their repo rate, they are signaling to the market what they would like to see happening. So whether it's an increase of 2 percentage points or 3 or 0 or half isn't really all that important. Also bear in mind that even the prime rate is not an arbitrary thing, but it is it's kind of a benchmark. Some customers, some clients really have a good track record, might be able to negotiate something far less than the official prime rate as their lending rate. So it's more about just the way in which interest rates move upwards or downwards.
You'll forgive me, though, Prof, that if If this 3.5% issue is really a legal or constitutional requirement, but has such...
No, it isn't.
That's exactly what I'm saying. If it isn't a legal or a constitutional requirement, but it is done almost religiously because it is a kind of tradition, but with the kind of impact on society and the economy, surely we should be demanding more from policymakers in terms of why it is that banks then follow this tradition, because I should put this as a question. Are there instances where the bank will provide facilities to a client without the consideration of the 3.5%?
Oh, yes. As I was saying, the prime rate, as the so-called official prime rate, is merely a benchmark. Depending on the credit worthiness of the client, you might be able to negotiate prime less 2 or prime less 1 or sometimes even prime less 3. But I will go back again to the fundamental story. Let's say that the prime rate as from tomorrow will be 11.25% because the Reserve Bank would like it to be there. Mm. If the difference between the prime and the repo rate was, say, 2%, they would simply raise the repo rate in such a way that even after that gap effect account, the prime rate would be 11.25. So really, the big issue is not so much what that gap is. It's more about moving in the same direction.
Understood.
The really big issue is probably as to whether or not the bank has not become a little bit overzealous, the Reserve Bank, in trying to keep inflation under control. And my sense is that maybe it has, with this increase today, perhaps become a bit overzealous, because we have to bear in mind, as we all know, that alongside high inflation, we also have an economy on the brink, teetering on the brink of a technical recession. We know, obviously, we have intolerably high unemployment rates. We have, as I mentioned earlier, food prices rising rapidly, extremely, extremely quickly, affecting the poorest of the poor, most of all, of course. Just bear in mind that for the poorest members of our society, virtually 50% of their entire spending goes towards food. We have load shedding, the price of energy. So it's a very tough and difficult and technical, delicate trade-off between combating inflation, which is important, it's crucial, but they're not overplaying your hand and plunging the economy into a really bad place.
So essentially, we have, in terms of the interpretation of the South African Reserve Bank, in terms of their interpretation of the mandate, the constitutional mandate that they have, we have this instrument of the raising and the lowering of interest rates to try and cool down the effects of inflation, if I understand you correctly, Prof.
Yeah, the raising, yes.
Right.
Yes,
of course, the raising specifically, right. You said a very interesting thing there, that is an interpretation of the Constitution. Talk to me about that.
Well, the Constitution in some ways is non-negotiable. It says the Reserve Bank's primary objective is to protect the value of the currency with a view towards creating a stable financial environment which is required for future sustainable economic growth. So first and foremost, keep inflation under control. But remember, it's not just about inflation. It's about the international value of the rand. And this is where it gets even more interesting. If bear in mind, elsewhere in the world, generally speaking, interest rates are rising. They have been for some time. We saw recently the Federal Reserve once again raise their interest rates. Now, if their interest rates are rising and ours do not rise, then the investments in South Africa become less attractive, and in the long run, in the short run, in fact, the rand might actually further weaken. I want to repeat that. If interest rates elsewhere in the world are rising and we don't track those, then the rand will weaken. And then we're again going to get another bout of inflation via imported inflation.
Yes.
So just to prove that point in a different way, today, with the unexpectedly high increase in the repo rate, the immediate reaction was the rand actually strengthened, which is what one would expect. It might not remain strong for very long, but certainly by raising interest rates today, we have helped to some extent to prevent a further weakening of the rand. So it starts getting very tricky when you start having to decide, well, which way do you want to go? I often say to people, if you want lower interest rates, I'm sure many of us do, then we're actually saying we're willing to accept a weaker currency. Conversely, if you want the rand to strengthen, you need to hope for higher interest rates.
What then is interpretive about that? I mean, it sounds pretty straightforward to me. What makes that an interpretation of the Constitution?
So
in other words,
what I'm
trying to understand is,
yes,
it sounds as though that if it's an interpretation, that there is another way of understanding this mandate. Is there?
No. It's fairly clear. And then the anchor they use to determine what is an acceptable level or protection is, as I mentioned earlier, the inflation targets of between 3% and 6%. That is deemed to be an acceptable range. In other countries, the targets are much stricter, by the way. In America and Europe, their target is bluntly 2%. That is their target. We don't envisage a 2% target, because that would require exceptionally high rates of interest in our country. So we have 3 to 6% of the target range, which is thought by most to be an acceptable reality for a country of our nature, our level of development, and all our other problems. So it could be far worse. If we had a 2% target rate for inflation, then interest rates would be much higher than they have been for the last decade or longer. So we have to combine the very clear mandate of the Reserve Bank, protect the value of the currency, and the anchor for that is then, as I say, this target range of 3 to 6%.
I want to talk a little bit more about this target range of 3 to 6% after Tsepo's question to you. Tsepo is in Pretoria. Good evening to you, Tsepo.
Yeah, evening, Bro Ops.
Sure.
Here's a question to Prof. Prof just said that the current inflation driver is not the expenditure. It's not people borrowing money from the bank and spending. It is from the oil and all of the other things. But my view is, why is the Reserve Bank using one strategy that pushes the people not to take more credit and spend in the economy, as opposed to addressing the issue, which is something that's not really related to people taking money from the banks? I mean, you can't discourage people from taking credit when actually inflation driver is not there. So what I'm seeing here is people really doing one thing that's not really addressing the problem. The problem is not coming from us taking credit. So why we are being punished, and we've been punished for over 2 years already. The second question is, is there potential for this thing to be endless? Because clearly whatever they're doing is not working. They've been increasing this is the ninth time they're increasing the interest. Now, if it's not changing, that means they're going to increase the thing indefinitely. And we likely going to lose our houses. Today, the Constitution protects the people on the verge of losing their properties as a result of these extensive increases, where it's not us, the contributors of inflation going up.
I hear you, Tsepo. I hear you. Yeah. Let's hear what the Prof has to say. Thanks very much for that question. Prof?
It was a little soft at times, but I think the first part of the question was, just help me out there. The first part was...
So is inflation targeting using the interest rates actually working?
Yes. Yeah.
Because
yeah,
actually the problem is outside of the domestic economic activities of South Africans. What should be done is to target those issues rather than the you know, the borrowing behaviors of South Africans who, if they have the money to spend, that would be an incentive or a stimulant to the I'm paraphrasing here, Prof. But
I got it. Well, first of all, it's not totally correct to say that it is that the demand for credit is not playing a role. My point earlier was it is still playing a role along with other factors. Now, the listener's question was, should we not be charging these other factors? Well, yes, but the Reserve Bank can't target that. So some of these other factors include the very high level of government debt. That is contributing towards inflation. Mm. Now, that in turn is driven by things such as what we saw just a couple of days ago, another increase in civil servant salaries. That all by itself is going to be inflationary. So we have to ask ourselves, and so does our listener, if we don't have the Reserve Bank doing something, are civil servants willing to sacrifice a wage increase? We look at obviously the whole ESCOM story. The Reserve Bank can do nothing about that. So we have to ask who's responsible for that one. If we have a look at the international price of oil, way beyond obviously the ambit of any central bank, never mind South Africa's Reserve Bank. If we have a look at food inflation, that's a result of all kinds of factors, but certainly not something the Reserve Bank can control. So, as I made the point earlier, it's an unfortunate reality that the Reserve Bank has to kind of take responsibility, even though monetary factors aren't always responsible for inflation.
Yeah.
Then the other point made by the listener is,
are we going to have increases of this nature in perpetuity? And is there a cap at some point?
He says it's not working. Well, you know, it is actually working. Let me try to explain in a slightly different way. If it wasn't for the interest rate increases we've had over the last year or so, the inflation rate now would probably be approaching 13%, 14%, 15%. So interest rates increases do work exceptionally well, although very painful. If we want to see inflation down to 4.5%, the Reserve Bank could engineer that by raising interest rates probably to, I don't know, 12%, 13%, as we have seen in the country's history. So it works. It certainly works in bringing down inflation. It works with a time lag. But as we've been saying for the last 20 minutes, it does come at a price.
Yeah.
Now, just to perhaps add to this whole dilemma, right now we are experiencing, as is America and Europe and many others, a very unfortunate reality called stagflation. Stagflation is a combination of low economic growth, hence the stag, and then at the same time, high inflation. So low growth and high inflation. This is a very uncomfortable and unfortunate reality. No one likes this. Because as a policymaker, as a central bank, it's a mug's game. You're on the losing end, whatever you do. So if you're concerned about inflation, then you will raise interest rates, but then the already sluggish economic growth gets even worse. If you decide to say to yourself as a central bank, okay, let's rather focus on the sluggish economy by lowering interest rates, the price you will pay for that is significantly higher inflation, which will mean at a later stage, you'll really have to raise interest rates dramatically to address that one. Mm. So stagflation is an awful thing to have to deal with. Ironically, if a country has high growth and high inflation, it's easy to live with that, because then you can raise interest rates.
What you're saying to us is it's either the pain of regret or the pain of discipline, is what you're saying to me, Prof.
In a certain sense, yes.
Yeah.
So and also going back to your listener's question.
Yeah, people are going to lose their homes, their cars, Prof.
Yeah,
I mean, should there be some sort of protection for people who have thus far been paying well, but now face the real prospects of losing their homes, their cars, and that can be a major upheaval in the economy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, undoubtedly. But it kind of links up to what I was going to say, that we must also bear in mind that fundamentally, And I think we had this conversation sometimes last year. South Africa is a nation of debtors, of chronic debtors. When I say South Africa, I mean South Africans as well as governments, you name it. We have become almost addicted to debt for the last 10 to 15 years. Now, I'm not a sermon, and we're probably also all equally guilty, but you cannot sustain debt for long, just a few years. Unfortunately, we have fallen into that trap. The level of household debt is around about 70 to 80% of our household income, whereas in days gone by, it was very rarely higher than 60%. The level of government debt, we all know about that. And the problem with our debt levels is that we have been borrowing money, and I'm generalizing awfully, but borrowing money, both we as households and government, for all the wrong reasons. It's fine to borrow money if you're going to use it to acquire assets.
Yeah.
If you're a government, if you're going to use it to build new roads. If you're a household, to buy a house. Unfortunately, many of us are borrowing money, government as well, for all the wrong reasons. To finance civil servant salaries, to finance current spending, to pay the grocery card, as it were. And that's unhealthy debt. And I'm afraid of catching up with us. Just one more point to make at this stage. Just also bear in mind that high interest rates is not bad news for everybody. It is a wonderful day for many millions of people, especially older people, who rely very heavily on interest as their major source of revenue. A few years ago, when interest rates were dropping, millions of people were getting poorer and poorer. Now, with interest rates rising, millions of people are a little bit better off today than they were yesterday.
Professor André Roux, I must stop you there. I must stop you there. We've run out of time. Can I ask you, Prof, that we organize an hour for us just to break some of these issues down as a matter of education and not just driven by this particular day's announcements. But I want to thank you as always, Prof, for being available.
It's a pleasure.
Looking forward to our next conversation. Economist at the University of Stellenbosch, Professor André Roux.